Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960, 602-5080-960. Go straight to your calls. Doug's in Maricopa. Hello, Doug.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. You know, I was wanting to kind of ask some questions. You were talking about events that we should be asking redress for. Is that correct?
Sure.
Well, here's the question is before we do that, in any strategy that I've been involved in, we have to first say, how did we get here? And then how did we get in a situation where liberals control everything? And asking for redress is almost an impossible situation. In other words, once territory is taken over, whether it's moral territory, cultural territory, or military territory, it takes 4, 5, 6, 10 times more energy to try to regain the ground than to have maintained it. Don't you believe so?
Yeah, and I think preventing it from the first place is yet another level of
yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. So we have to look at ourselves, because if you put two wrestlers in the ring, they're going to go at it hopefully with the same enthusiasm for the best person to win. If one goes in and is kind of standing around wanting to be sweet and not do anything, and the other one wants to wrestle, I can guarantee I know who's going to win.
Yeah, yeah.
And what we have been is we've been in the arena of ideas, but we're basically standing around, and we have for so many years, when I was growing up, the culture, the greater society reinforced our greater values for the most part. I heard my values on television. I heard my family's values in the Westerns I watched and the TV and at school and around. We got lazy, and the liberals looked around and said, we've got to change this and we got to take over. And so they've been motivated, and basically the consequences were small. They were tiny steps, and we kept accommodating the tiny steps, because they were just tiny steps, and we thought that would make them happy and placate them. But as all they did is step into the void, and then they started asking for another tiny step. And we gave them that, and we gave them that, and we gave them that, and we gave them that. In other words, we gave them the institutions. So the question I have to ask is, what is going to be required from us? And I think I'm starting to see it in the Republican Party, some people who are willing to fight. But what's going to be required from us other than puppies and happiness and getting on our knees and all this other stuff? What actionable things are going to be required from us to make the changes, to fight back? Because here's my quote of the day, again, from John Stuart Mill. And he said, now don't think of it as war as battle, but it's cultural war and spiritual war and, you know, every kind of battle that there is. He said, war is an ugly thing, but it is not the ugliest of things. The decayed, degraded state of moral and patriotic feeling, which thinks that nothing is worth the war, is far worse.
You know, who understands that intuitively is the left.
Yes.
They don't have any compunctions about war,
no.
Political or kinetic. You said a lot there, and I want to unpack it in order as best as I can. Redress of grievances, interesting phrase, comes from our First Amendment. The etymology of redress means to re-straighten out, redis civiere, means to re-straighten out. Now, you can't leave to the people who made the problem the task of fixing the problem. That's point one. That's the first point to be made. You can't leave in the hands, the repair, those who broke it. And that's an animating thought for our movement and our party and everyone who's just sick and tired of this stuff. Sick and tired of being lied to, sick and tired of being gaslit, sick and tired of having their values be devalued. That's point one. point two, you said something interesting. You just kind of expected your values to kind of be, if not reinforced, echoed on, I think you said, television in schools. I wrote that down, television in schools. Yeah. What kind of television did you grow up on? Just think about it. Let's leave the schools alone. We've spent enough time on them, but we can come back to them. I'm not in any sense wanting to give them a pass here. Just haven't spoken about television in a while. So Jerry Seinfeld the other day was saying that, you know, families used to go home or gather around the television at night and turn on the TV for a laugh. You know, just sit around and have a laugh. Have a good time. Make sport of themselves through what they saw on their television. They would watch shows like, I don't know, Bewitched or I Dream of Jeannie or Gilligan's Island or, you know, other shows that you think about them, you know, they didn't have an agenda, but we could all kind of recognize certain norms, you know, a family, the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do, the importance of communication. And, you know, they could turn certain laugh lines into it. You turn on a television set now or a streaming service now to get a laugh, there's no value in it at all. There's no reflective value of anything in there other than cynicism and politics. It's all based on cynicism and politics and nothing reinforcing.
No.
Last thing, most controversial, I'll say, then I'll give it back to you, brother, is you said something like getting on our knees isn't going to do it. And I'm going to challenge you on that, and you'll probably accept my position on that. You know, that's one of the things we have lost here in a big way. I think one of three or four or five most important statistics of the past several years is that more people have left the church in the last generation than joined it in the First Great Awakening and the Second Great Awakening and all of the Billy Graham Crusades combined. More people have left the church in the last generation than all three of those things. What's happened to this country? Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. I do think that there has to be something said about the importance of the tie to Judeo-Christian values and support for this country and its values. Sever one, sever the other.
Yeah. Right.
Three thoughts based on what you said.
I can't disagree with number three at all. Matter of fact, it's a caveat. I think too many people, by the way, I think strongly that I don't believe in being a Sunday Christian. I believe in daily prayer. I believe in prayer immensely so. But too many have used it as a replacement for any action.
Yeah, I get that.
Now,
I accept that, too. I accept that point.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I submit to you that part of the reason that we have had so many people leave the church is because we lost the culture. And we thought that being Christian and being Jewish and being faithful meant going to the synagogue, going to our church, going to our temple, and on Saturday or Sunday, and that was enough. And then when the morals decayed and convinced a new generation that personal pleasure was there, it was being convinced by, I believe, evil or, you know, satanic forces. You can say whatever it is, you know, secularism or whatever. We gave that away because we became an inactive force of Christianity.
I want to go further on this point, though, with you, if I might. And
sure.
I'm a little I'm going further than you are on this, I think. Back
well,
in my no, it's okay. It's this point, and I guess I got to take a commercial break. So let me state my thesis, and then I'll let you rejoin on the other side. There is something osmotic happening when you have Judeo-Christian values, church-going values, unwatered down and unvarnished in this country that leads to a natural patriotism. So it's not, I guess, that just getting on your knees is enough. I'm saying it's a darned good start. When I was in my speechwriting practice, political speechwriting, and I would write speeches for people that gave speeches in a lot of different venues, but primarily most of my work was writing speeches in evangelical communities. When we wrote and spoke about America, it got more response than any other specific issue. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Doug in Maricopa and I are conversing here on a point. Doug, I was simply making the point that, getting on our knees and staying on them isn't enough, perhaps the way you're casting it. But I'm saying it's a darned good starting point, given the connection, the inexplicable, really, connection between those with faith in God who see this country as Lincoln put it, almost chosen. You have faith in God, you're going to have a better view and a stronger tug towards the United States of America. And so I'm just a little to the north of you on this point. And it's not a massive point that we're disagreeing on. And I don't even know if we're really disagreeing. I'm just saying I think we're undervaluing how much it has cost us the loss of faith in the churches and synagogues in this country, and that it does, I think, translate very much to a loss of faith in this country. Are you there, Doug? I'm guessing you're on mute.
Sorry, I did it again. Yep. I put myself on mute when I went back to work.
Go ahead.
I don't disagree at all. And it would actually be really fun if you just came out and said, listen here, Doug, I disagree boldly with you. It'd be
well,
really
I know
exciting.
We don't really disagree. Yeah. I know we don't.
No, we don't. Here's my only point with that, because I think, having faith, I think, is one of the foundational principles of it. You know, it is the American theme. We were one of the most religious country on earth. The evangelical movement began on the eastern frontiers of America, you know. And it is that movement, the evangelical movement, that drove the abolitionist movement for 40 years before the Civil War. It is truly, you know, American. But what I'm saying then, though, is I'm old enough to have seen my father in business, and I know the how the businessmen talked and how they resisted the shift to the left in their businesses. And I saw the next generation who was more enlightened and less religious. Okay, they said they were religious, but here's the difference. The old timers fought for it tooth and nail, because you cannot look at losing every boardroom. That boardroom is lost because someone caved and someone compromised. That's my point.
Yeah. And no, it's a fair point.
That school is lost because someone gave way to the leftist secular.
Sure.
That's the
and
only
my point
way
is
we
there's
lost.
Something in back of that CEO, and that's faith
absolutely.
Or lack of faith. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What I'm saying, though, is I know too many evangelical friends and too many Catholic friends and too many LDS friends, and they all want to go to church, and I've heard this over and over again. I just want to devote myself to the Lord. I just want to, and I'm going, okay, that's fine if you lived in the Waltons, okay? But you can't turn your back on transing your kids. You can't turn your back on the
that's right.
evils.
No, that's
and,
right.
And then the question is, it got here because we did that. That's
right.
all I'm saying.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I guess I would add to it, if you think about the 1970s and 1980s when we had a revival of sorts. You know, we had the evangelical revival in the 1970s in this country.
A lot
of Ronald Reagan's success is attributable to that.
I agree.
And
I agree.
If you recall, after the moral majority kind of faded away and Pat Robertson and Ralph Reed came forward with the Christian Coalition, remember how much animus was directed at them. Do you remember how the culture just totally turned on the notion that anyone could be a member or a supporter of the Christian Coalition? And then you looked at what the Christian Coalition stood for. What did it stand for? Well, generally, obviously, Christian principles. But on a policy scale, nothing that was outside mainstream Reagan conservatism. Nothing.
No.
Nothing.
No.
But they knew, the left and the high culture, the elite culture knew, the more Christian, the harder the fight they'd have.
Absolutely. I agree with that. But there are Christians. There's a form, there's a culture that in our side, in our political side, that as soon as Reagan left, it said the Reagan, you know, Bush sent out, the first Bush, that the era of Reagan is over.
Yeah.
Now, they will tell you they're a Christian.
Yeah.
Okay? But basically, they were the type of Christian that wanted to accommodate the establishment.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, believe me, no matter what is said, I can sit here for an hour and listen to everybody talk, and I would say we lost it for a reason.
Yeah.
Those boardrooms had to be given because we were in the power position when I was a child, and I knew those men, and I knew those positions, and I knew how they fought. And there was a cultural change on our side that caused the left could not take it unless it was given to them. What did they walk in and kick all the conservatives off?
Right,
no.
Right. But I mean, they did intimidate them. But
you
they
have
did
to tell
but,
me the mis-
but they did I'm intimidate sorry. Them. And I bet the stronger your faith. Okay, here we go again. I bet the stronger your faith, the less easy it is to intimidate you.
There it is.
Okay.
There it is. Right. And so they became so morally weak that someone could intimidate them, and they backed up and gave in like that. We were pathetic.
Yeah. What does Dennis Prager say about the churches during COVID? Who did they fear more, the government or God?
Yeah. The churches that stood in faith and like when the ministers that were being arrested, oh my God, I was 1,000 miles from the church and I gave their churches money, you know, because those were my kind of people. I said they were the souls of this earth and they were fighting for principles. Most of us caved in.
Yeah.
You know, believe me. And I tell you that, and this is in war and history. You know, I don't care if it's Germany.
Japan. Listen, it's easier to be intimidated by the government than by God. In a way, it is. In a way, it is. And I don't mean to I don't mean to utter apostasy when I say it. It's just that the government touches you very quickly and very tangibly in a way that, you know, it's harder to see God's hand, you know?
And our culture can intimidate us. We are more embarrassed that some people would think badly of us than God might think
totally
badly
true.
Of
what
us.
A great discussion, Doug.
Yeah.
What a great discussion. Well, thank you, sir. Thank you and bless you for all your good work. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, as always.
And we agree.
We always agree.
All right. I wanted to make sure we have clarity and agreement. We have both. All right. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. On February 17th, 2022, Brittany Griner, the WNBA player, was taken captive by Vladimir Putin. In Russia. I think I'm right about this, that until February 17th, 2022, the vast, I mean vast majority of Americans didn't know who she was. Didn't know who she was. They just didn't. I mean, can anyone in this audience tell me another name of a WNBA player right now? And they couldn't do so on February 16th, 2022 either. But she was taken captive by Vladimir Putin, by Russia, and she was held hostage against her will in prison for 10 months. For 10 months. Now, one can talk about, you know, whether her announced imprisonment by the Russian authorities and the trial she received was fair or not. rather harsh. Nonetheless, she broke the laws of travel into Russia by bringing marijuana into Russia, which they don't like. It's against the law. She broke the law, and she was imprisoned, and harshly, draconianly. And her name was everywhere for those 10 months, all the time. President was asked about her. The president spoke out about her. Everyone did. Everyone did. She has a, she's still being spoken about. She has a new book out. And the Washington Post has given her space on its op-ed page as an op-ed, a verbatim adaptation from her new book, her memoir. It's called Coming Home. So what they did was they took excerpts from it and just put it into the Washington Post op-ed page under her byline. And they say, you know, this article, this op-ed is, excuse me, adapted from her coming home. There's no leisure domain about it. But they gave her something like 3,000 words. I mean, it is a long op-ed slash adaptation excerpt. Okay. Okay. I'm not going to bewail the trauma she and her family went through or undermine it or criticize it. And I'm not going to criticize the concern we had for this American who was held hostage by Russia. Pause. Give me one name of the five Americans still alive being held hostage by Hamas going on 8 months. One. Has the president said any of their names? Has anyone? Can anyone give me a name of one of these Americans? Omri Maron, perhaps, or Hirsch Goldberg Polan? Hirsch Goldberg Polan. He was in a hostage video. He was in a hostage video Hamas released, was it last month? A couple weeks ago? A few months ago? A few weeks ago? Missing half his arm. He had his full arm on October 6th. An American being held hostage, being tortured, mayhem, half his arm cut off. In a hostage tape that Hamas released. Is there something a little inequitable about this? The attention Brittany Griner was given, who actually broke the law, but, you know, checked a lot of boxes in the culture. Checked a lot of boxes. I don't need to go through them with you. But she was one, and everyone knew her name. And the president spoke of her often, and the press corps asked the president about her often, and so too the White House press secretary, and so too Speaker of the House, and so too members of Congress and the Senate, and so too journalists. Five Americans still being held hostage, over 30 killed. Any of their names ever pass the lips of anyone? I guess their names aren't Brittany Griner, and thus they're not worth mentioning or keeping in mind. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. David Dahl, what's going on in your world? Any fun updates on the life of David or any fun political pins today?
Not much. I've been dealing with car troubles, as you know, and so it's been going to and from places.
This is your 1980 Chrysler, your 1981?
Yes, my Chrysler Imperial, yes. I had a new fear unlocked. I broke down in a car wash.
Yeah, that's a fear.
That's a new fear,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a fear. I don't know what the equivalent would be, a wardrobe malfunction at the dry cleaners. I don't know what it would be. But yeah.
You know, a horse breaking a leg in the stable.
Yeah. Okay. Well, best wishes. What am I supposed to say here?
I made some lackluster shrimp fried rice last night.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. if I don't do well on a recipe sometimes, and I don't know if you do this ever with monologues, but if I just don't do well on a recipe or I don't like the final product, it'll never make it to the final – it'll never make it to the Instagram feed, you know, if the final product is just not good. Yeah.
You know who doesn't believe that?
Who?
The Democratic Party with their presidential nominee.
Well –
story is that the Biden administration is withholding precision weaponry from Israel over their campaign in Rafah, in Gaza. And one has to ask why they would do that. You know, when you have a battle against a terrorist entity in a, you know, highly urbanized area, you'd think precision weaponry would lead to less loss of life in trying to eliminate that terrorist threat. That's just a strategic point. But the question as to why the United States, why the Biden administration would be doing that is another question altogether. You have an ally fighting a designated terrorist organization that's holding hostages, including American hostages. And it's withholding weaponry from that ally in that campaign, in that fight. And the natural and obvious answer is that the Democratic Party has a Michigan problem, has a political problem. And everyone knows that's what's animating this. Everyone knows it. But has everyone connected the dots? I was saying earlier, I'm old enough to remember a few things that transpired over the last 5 or 6 years, including the year 2019. 5 years? When a president was impeached. A president was impeached for threatening, to withhold aid for political purposes. Does anyone remember that? Does anyone remember the phone call with Zelensky by Donald Trump? Now, I thought the phone call was perfectly reasonable. I didn't see anything untoward about it. I wasn't alone. You know who else thought it was a perfectly reasonable phone call? Vladimir Zelensky. He said as much. He didn't think there was anything wrong with the phone call either. But the Democrats did, and they ginned up an impeachment campaign and an impeachment vote against Donald Trump. And the charge and the complaint was that he was withholding aid to an ally for political purposes. Is that going to obtain here? Are we going to have any form of consistency here? When people like Doug call in and say, you know, how come we don't play like they do? Here's another example of that. Here's another example of it. I know that Lindsey Graham is not everyone's cup of tea. And 5 days out of 10, he isn't mine either, but probably 5. I know for most people it's more like 8. It's okay. It's okay. We're a big country and a big party. But I do think even those who believe 8 out of 10 days when he's wrong on those 2 days or when he's right, he's really good, he can be. I want you to hear a hearing he had today with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and the Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. Just give it a moment.
In my view, so I'm going to keep supporting Ukraine. Now, you just confirmed that that we're delaying transfer or stopping transfer of certain weapons like 2,000-pound bombs to Israel. Is that correct?
Secretary Austin? We're assessing where we are right now.
Well, there are media reports that has happened. Are they incorrect?
That we have made a decision to?
Yeah.
Again, we've made no decisions. Okay. We're assessing.
Are you worried that if you make a decision to deny weapons that Israel say they need, that it would send a signal to Hamas and Iran to keep pushing?
Senator, we want to make sure that we're providing the right kinds of weaponry.
Okay. Would you have supported dropping the atomic bombs on Hiroshima or Nagasaki?
Listen to this.
General Brown, to end World War II.
Well, Senator, I think just based on the situation, what are they?
Well, we know. I mean, it's happened. We know. I'm not asking. They did it. Do you think that was disproportionate?
It was definitely.
Do you, in hindsight, do you think that was the right decision for America to drop two atomic bombs on the Japanese cities in question?
Well, I'll tell you, it stopped the World War.
Do you agree, General Austin? If you'd been around, would you say drop them?
I agree with the chairman here.
If we go back in time, says, hey, we got two atomic bombs, should we drop them? What would you say?
Well, I think the leadership was interested in curtailing the.
Well, what's Israel interested in? Do you believe Iran really wants to kill all the Jews if they could? The Iranian regime? Yeah. Do you believe Hamas is serious when they say we'll keep doing it over and over again? Do you agree that they will if they can?
I do. Hamas,
okay.
Though,
right. Do you believe that Hezbollah is a terrorist organization also bent on the destruction of the Jewish state?
Hezbollah is a terrorist organization.
Okay, so Israel's been hit in the last few weeks by Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas, dedicated to their destruction. And you're telling me you're going to tell them how to fight the war and what they can and can't use when everybody around them wants to kill all the Jews? And you're telling me that if we withhold weapons in this fight, the existential fight for the life of the Jewish state, it won't send the wrong signal? Do you still think it was a good idea, General Austin, to get out of Afghanistan?
I support the president's decision.
Yeah, I think you do. I think it was a disastrous decision. If we stop weapons necessary to destroy the enemies of the state of Israel at a time of great peril, we will pay a price. This is obscene. It is absurd. Give Israel what they need.
I'll tell you what I think. I think General Austin actually doesn't believe the bombs should have been dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But he can't say it. He's being dishonest at every level. Portions of this show brought to you by our friends at YRefi. YRefi has a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Fed. With YRefi, you're in control. You can turn your income on or off. You can compound it whatever you like. With YRefi, there are absolutely no fees. With YRefi, you can have peace of mind, as there is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. With YRefi, of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. And best of all, as I said, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, not tied to the stock market or the Fed. Check them out at investyrefi.com. It's invest, the letter Y, then REFY.com, or give them a call at 888-YREFY-24, 888-YREFY-24. Steve Hayward over at Powerline, he has occasional posts under the title of Loose Ends, and they're always worth watching or reading or going to. They usually come with the Steve Hayward sense of humor, but they're always something serious underlying it. Joe Biden, for example, reading off a teleprompter today, where he again read the prompt, like he did last week with pause. He said, I'm going to run for 4 more years, and then he said pause when the teleprompter was just telling him to pause so that people could applaud. Today he did it again, this time reading the words last name. He was telling a story about a theology professor of his. He says, I went to school with a guy named Riley, and then last name. I don't even know why they put it in the teleprompter, to be honest with you. You know, that's the problem with the Biden administration. The whole thing stinks. The whole thing is awful from the top to the bottom. There's an old saying that a fish rots from the head down. I don't know if that's technically true or not, but the whole fish is rotten here. From Karine Jean-Pierre on up, from the people feeding the teleprompter on up, there is a rot in this administration. And perhaps it's because it doesn't have anything other than a feckless leader. Perhaps. Perhaps. And perhaps he doesn't even know and isn't even being told when he errs and makes these mistakes. And that would be the weirdest thing. Are his advisors telling him when he errs and when he makes a mistake? And if they aren't, doesn't that concern you too? There's a lot of concern to go around here. Just an awful lot. But read Steve Hayward's Loose Ends. There's a lot in it. We'll be right back.